The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
Rodrigo.
Scott.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans. And Scott.
And Scott.
Jimmy Smits.
Had this kind of when it got to Rodrigo, it had a real, you know, finality first name kind of deal going, and I'm like, all right, I'll go along, let's do this. Fine.
In this issue here, the walls of Kaiju Max are funny. First you hate them, then you get used to them, then you get to depend on them, even if you're a Godzilla. Either get busy stomping Tokyo or get busy fighting a giant robot. Plus, updates on the stuff you love, the news from D23, a host of reviews, and even our patented Major Spoilers, Vim and Vigor, whatever that means. So get Cheddar to fetch you the championship cummerbund and declare victory, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on.
Welcome to issue 994 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for checking us out. Thank you, Scott Johnson, for joining us once again.
Ooh, this is perilously close to 1,000, man.
I know. We are five weeks away. I will have to look. Let me just look here at my schedule for 2022. Five away, one, two, three, four, five, Ghostbusters. Oh, Scott, you may just miss our 1,000th episode by a week. I don't know. We'll have to double check and see. But right now,
we'll bring it back for 1,001.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Actually, I think he's at 999.
Am I?
No, you may be at 1,000. We'll have to see.
You know what? 999 is kind of a cool. That's kind of a cool landmark too. So I'm not going to complain either.
Yeah, you're marked down. People think you're less.
Yeah, you're a better bargain. Yeah. What a bargain we are bringing you this week as we talk Kaiju Max. We've got a bunch of reviews, but also this past weekend the D23 Fan Expo. They tend to hide the word fan because that's who it's really targeted towards. But the big D23 event took place in Anaheim, California. If you missed Brian Ibbett doing all of his rundown, he was there, had a lot to see and do. Ashley Victoria Robinson was there with Popverse doing all the things that she was doing. And of course, Jason Inman was doing, not quite sure what Jason Inman was doing, but if you go check his Instagram, you can see what he was doing at D23. None of us went to D23, but we have some thoughts on the stuff that that went down. There's a lot to cover. I don't know if we need to cover everything, but I think most interested in the Indiana Jones 5 news that they showed. They showed a little bit of footage from that. Harrison Ford came out, definitely said, hey, look, I'm 80 years old. This is the last time I'm playing this character. I'm not taking a fall for you guys anymore. While the character hasn't been announced in the movie officially, Short Round was backstage and had a picture taken with Harrison Ford, the actor who played Short Round. And so maybe there's going to be some Short Round reckoning happening in this fifth Indiana Jones movie, which I would love to see. So that could be really good. So I'm really interested. I know, and I talked about this with you on Monday, Scott, that it's been a long, long time since I've seen Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. And maybe time and distance have softened my harsh feelings about that movie. So I kind of want to go back and watch it. I kind of don't. But at the same time, I'm very positive about Indiana Jones 5. It feels like everybody learned what they shouldn't have done by throwing Indiana Jones in a refrigerator and nuking him.
Yeah.
And of course you've got the other problematic person in that movie. But I'm really kind of excited about seeing Indiana Jones 5.
I like listening to you avoid saying,
Shia LaBeouf's
name. So I agree with you, and I'm weirdly positive on this, like in a way that I didn't quite expect. I think the big kicker here is James Mangold is not only directing, but having a big hand in the writing of it. Mm-hmm. And I really like everything he's ever done.
Yeah.
To the point of kind of like I'll watch anything Mangold makes. So this is to me the reason to see it. And he made a comment. Harrison Ford made a comment that you kind of, I think you may have alluded to it. But he said something to the effect of this is one of the good ones or something.
I think he was referring to his co-star.
And he might have. If he was referring to the movie, that would be a big deal because Harrison Ford's grumpy about everything. So the fact that he's got some positive vibes about this and got kind of emotional on stage and That's not him at all. That's usually, he's usually like, all right, I'm off to my place in Wyoming with my wife from TV, and I don't want to talk to any of you anymore.
And
like, he's
weed.
Pretty grumpy about it.
But yeah.
The fact that he seems, you know, so positive about it, I just think there's no reason for me to think this is going to be worse than Crystal Skull. So it's already a win in that direction.
He seemed to have fun with his last time on Star Wars, because I think he knew that this is the last time I have to deal with Han Solo. So maybe this is
him. Well, they finally let him die in the movie. So
yeah, well, maybe that's like, maybe that's why he's happy.
He's been wanting to do that since 1982.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's happy about this one. Scott, what was your big story that you were excited about that came out of D23?
That was one of them. The other one is actually a video game that was announced for, and there's other things like Thunderbolts looks awesome. I'm actually excited about Willow, and I hate the Willow movie, but I really like the idea of Willow series. I think we've learned a lot since then, so I think we can pull it off. But aside from all of that, there's a game, and the name just escaped me, but it's basically Captain Tom? America World War II.
Oh, no, I know it's that World War II Captain America.
Black Panther.
World yeah. Order? No, that's the movie.
No, yeah.
It's untitled. They didn't title it.
Oh, then is that why I don't remember? That might be why.
Yeah, it's like untitled Captain America Black Panther game.
That looks cool on very little information. Like, we don't have much about it, but there's some great key art, and there's some really good indications that this is like just a cool, rad, I don't know, return to the place I like Captain America most, which is in the thick of the World War II, let's get Hitler business. Yeah. So I'm kind of all for that. That thing really caught me off guard and made me excited. Everything else felt like, man, I knew this was coming and that was coming. And it's okay.
I haven't watched the trailer for that yet, but it looks like you get to play as one of four main characters, Steve Rogers, T'Challa's grandfather, Black Panther, Gabriel Jones, who is a soldier, and Nanali, who's a Wakandan spy. Those are the four characters you get to play.
I assume you get to play them. I don't know. I don't know if it's co-op. They gave us so few details. We don't know if it's co-op, if it's just a team you control. Is it just Captain America and these are ancillary characters? Like, I don't know.
This isn't by the same company that did the Guardians of the Galaxy game, is it?
No, that's, that was published by Square Enix, but it was made by, they're in Montreal.
I didn't care for that game.
That game was hit and miss for people. I think it was actually a really good game, but it really depended on your stomach for constant banter.
Mm-hmm. I liked it.
If you're okay with the banter, then I think you're more okay with the movie or the game. And I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
I was not a fan of how you jumped between characters in the middle of the game. That kind of turned me off. But conversely, I really enjoyed the Avengers game where you had Kamala Khan and you got to, as you were going into a mission, pick who you were going to play as. And you stayed that character throughout.
That's the one people like vehemently dislike.
And I don't know why. I don't know why. When it comes to video games, I am the opposite of everyone else. So
yeah, you're taking a fun road here. But it's the thing about both of those games is these are licenses that were acquired by Square Enix to really push on the Western side of their thing. Mm-hmm. And they were publicly, Square Enix, that is the Japanese division, very publicly unhappy with performance of both of those games, even though by the numbers they both did really well by most standards. But I think they were trying to unload them, and that's literally what happened. They dumped all their Western studios, including those developers and the Tomb Raider people and all that stuff. And the reason all that happened is because those Marvel games in particular didn't live up to the hype of how much money they thought a Marvel game should make. Hmm. And so they moved on. But
So this is Skydance is the game company. Have they done Skydance something? And of course it's got Mark Bernardin working on it. I like his stuff. So
yeah. Everybody involved there is good. And I should at least give some love in the direction of that Tron visual novel that they're making. Mm-hmm. Which is a game, but it's made by, the reason I'm excited about it, it's made by an indie developer, last name Bethel, I forgot his first name. Anyway, he made a game called Thomas Was Alone. And Thomas Was Alone is one of the most amazing narratives you've ever seen in a video game, especially because the video game is about like three or four basic shapes. One of them is Thomas, who's in a rectangle. He deals with squares and little cubes. And it's a very flat 2D, low rent looking game. But the story about Thomas and his world and what he needs to do in it, one of the greatest things I've ever read, period, in anything. Like, it was so good. And to hear that he's heading up this this Tron project got me super stoked. I don't know what to expect from it other than I really like that guy. So,
Matthew or Rodrigo, thoughts on the Captain America Black Panther game?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know very much. So I'm still waiting to see what else they come out with.
All right.
I actually enjoyed when Spider-Man would have you play a mission as somebody else. Even when it was an unpowered person, you're like having to do a mission as Mary Jane.
Oh, yeah,
Jane,
as Mary Jane. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really kind of cool. So I'm sort of fine with that. I feel like that may be a way to work with a larger cast and bring in more characters. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
as with anything, I probably won't play it until 6 months after Steven's tired of it. So, you know.
I need to see some gameplay before I buy into it. I really need to see some visuals and stuff. So, they try to push this weird realism in a lot of video games these days, which is just very off-putting. And that was another thing that kind of put me off on Guardians of the Galaxy. So it really is the look of the game is going to have a big impact on whether I want to pick it up or not. So
it's a really good point. And I think that stylization in those games goes a long way. And I wish they would do that more and be less afraid of it. I don't know why they're not. I think Square was really, I think that whole thing was a very strained relationship between Disney, Marvel and Square trying to get those games made. And, you know, they can't look too much like Steve Rogers from the movies. Right. So make sure
also you can't deviate too far from it because you want that to be recognizable.
Yeah. Right. Plus, you know, when it came to skins, which is the whole long tail on, especially the Avengers game, Disney was really picky about what you could or couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And it really hamstring the makers. So as much as I get excited about these Marvel games or Star Wars games, I also always have this in my back of my head, like Disney's such a taskmaster on that stuff that they make me nervous that they're going to, you know, sort of F it up, but we'll see.
Yeah. Matthew, was there something from D23 that caught your interest?
I am at the point where I am fascinated, to steal your word, by the idea of Thunderbolts, because we've actually, 16, 17 years into the extended Marvel live action universes. And we've literally gotten to the point where there are enough characters to pick 8 random characters from 5 different franchises and bring them together as a team of Thunderbolts that actually feels like it has a backstory worthy of the idea. And I just, that to me feels like the end game of whatever you're doing in, you know, your cinematic universes, because it allows us to really say, hey, this is what, you know, this is what the comics are really known for. This is the way you can take all of this shared universe nonsense and put it together into something new. It also may be, you know, the thing where people have been saying for 6-7 years that the next movie is the beginning of the end. This is the one that I really feel like could be the beginning of the end. So
I think the hardest,
I'm cautious.
Yeah. I think the hardest thing is that, Black Widow with Florence Pugh and, David Harbaugh as Red Guardian, that went directly to Disney Plus. Certainly a lot of people watched it, but it also was filled with controversy and a lot of people who refused to watch Black Widow. The Bucky Barnes and the Ghost characters, really, their story came from the Captain America TV series on Disney Plus. Same way with Julia Louis Dreyfus and Coast was from Ant-Man, right? But the Contessa,
I think.
Yeah, Taskmaster, also from, that's the Captain America one. And then you've got Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Wyatt Russell also coming from the Captain America television show. Captain America television show was not as widely watched, Scott Johnson, as a lot of the other shows. So I'm wondering if the biggest barrier to people getting into the Thunderbolts movie is, I don't think I've seen any of these people anywhere before, have I?
Or you don't remember them.
Yeah, or you don't remember them. That I think is probably the biggest barrier to the Thunderbolts is there's probably a lot of people who have not watched the Disney Plus series stuff as have watched the movies. So,
well, I feel like Winter Soldier made a real impact in the movie with his namesake. I think that's an amazing film still. So it's still, I think, my favorite Marvel movie overall. I love it. And I think there's enough staying power there for him and for Sebastian Stan. The others, it's hard to say. I mean, this is basically their chance to do Suicide Squad, but on the Marvel side.
Right.
And,
you mean the Academy Award winning the Suicide Squad?
That's the one. I think I'm with Matthew on this in that there's enough back material that they've kind of earned it more. Whereas, I really liked Suicide Squad, especially the James Gunn business. But part of what I loved about it was he's good at bringing characters to the front that you've never heard of before or don't care about, and then make you care about them. He did that with Guardians in a really strong way, and I think he did that well there. But I think that's really hard. It's a little easier when you have all this backstory on these characters already, and we kind of know a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them, and what they're up to and what their motivations might be. And I just think that makes for a more earned experience potentially if it's done right. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm reasonably excited about Thunderbolts, I think.
Yeah. Rodrigo, you have some thoughts?
I'm interested in it. It's interesting because a lot of the more superpowery villains have been killed off. So you only have if you count Bucky's arm, you only have like a couple people with superpowers. This is going to be a real shooty Marvel movie.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, but it's like less interesting that if there were like more superpowers involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause isn't Taskmaster and Ghost, they don't have superpowers either. I don't think anybody
Ghost,
has superpowers.
Ghost does.
Ghost yeah, can Ghost. Turn intangible. Yeah. Taskmaster has the ability to duplicate anything that she sees done. So having Taskmaster in a group of people without superpowers could be pretty cool because then she can steal other people's stuff.
She's good. Although, she's the master of tasks. So she is
a master of tasks.
Yeah.
The thing that really struck me as surprising was finding out that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is 62.
But I know, dude.
More importantly, looking at this and going, you know, some of these people are new, hot, up and coming talents, but in a very real way, Julia Louis-Dreyfus may be the biggest name on this film. And I'm kind of like, that excites me too, because you're going in without, like when Steven talks about the Suicide Squad, and I refuse to say
the Academy Award winning The Suicide Squad.
The biggest name in that film was really probably Idris Elba.
Yeah.
And even that's kind of an argument between Idris Elba and Margot Robbie. But the fun of that film, does Sylvester Stallone's voice count as a character? I don't think it does.
Barely.
Yeah. But yeah. The fun of that film was really seeing that story tying into stuff that we never saw and having, you know, as Scott said, Gunn, like create this out of whole cloth to where we go, oh, yeah, I remember that time the Polka Dot Man got his face kicked in by Batman. You know, you have that kind of potential here, but you also have that moment of what if it all goes horribly wrong, which may actually be a better
one. And if it does, I mean, sure. it's not gonna hurt Marvel.
No.
I'm pretty sure that the Suicide Squad movie that won the Oscar is not the Suicide Squad with Idris Elba. It's actually the Will Smith one.
Oh, is that the one that won? Yeah. I don't know.
That's the one that won, just like best hair or something like that.
Yeah, makeup and hair. Yeah.
Yep.
Hair and makeup.
The good Suicide Squad movie, the recent Suicide Squad.
Yeah, the one that's the Academy Award winner is just Suicide Squad.
The one that literally had James Gunn's brother playing three different characters. I mean, we all love Kirk, but
dude, Kirk. Oh my gosh, Kirk. That cracks me up. Because my wife watches that show about once a year, just binges the entire thing, and all I can think of is, yeah, you're the rat or whatever the hell it was. What was he? I forgot what he was. He's Rocket Raccoon's body double.
The weasel.
The weasel.
He was also Calendar Man in The Prison, and he voiced somebody else. So I'm just like, you know, the Gunn family are always going to have work so long as one of them has work, and I appreciate that. I'm really fine with that.
Rodrigo, what was the thing that caught your attention out of D23?
The thing that I was most interested in, and we also got very little on, is Werewolf by Night.
Oh, yeah. That trailer looks all sorts of crazy 1950s B-movie schlock.
Yeah, that was a fun trailer. I appreciate that treatment of the trailer because they were like, let's do something fun with it. And also, what I do whenever I get created with something or what leads to it, I don't have enough material for this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I was like, as an editor, I was happy to see that trailer and be like, I know why this trailer looks that way. It's because the editor pitched it back as this because they didn't have enough footage to make a full trailer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is going to be all black and white and presented this way.
Yeah, so it'll be if Gael Garcia is Bernal is Jack Russell, mm-hmm. Then that means that we'll have another Latinx superhero in the Marvel, character in the Marvel universe. Right. That's not a space alien, so that's helpful.
Right. Isn't Echo? Is Echo?
Echo is Native American.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Echo, the character in the comics, is Native American and Latina, but I don't know if her actor is.
Oh, right. Yeah. So the other one is Poe Dameron as Moon Knight. So, yeah.
I don't know. I want to see where this Werewolf by Night goes. We only have to wait until October 7th, so we've got less than a month to get to it. It looks, you know, if there was a Grindhouse movie that Marvel wanted to do and also make it look like a cheesy 50s B movie, this is it. So I'm kind of down for that, and I kind of want to see how far they'll go. Of course, now everything's changed now that Disney has that adult parental lock setting on there, which I hate, by the way. I wish I could just log in and it would leave me logged in, but no, every time my son goes and watches his thing on his account and I come back to me, please enter your PIN number. And it's like, God dang it, please stop. But yes, Werewolf by Night would probably allow them to push the limits a little bit more than what they've been allowed to do before. So,
yeah.
Well, they moved all the stuff over, including Punisher, the Netflix
and thing. And Daredevil and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what probably prompted it in the first place.
I thought I heard that they were going to go with the Russoff last name rather than Jack.
Oh, Russell. Are they? Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah, because I heard somebody, and it may be one of those talking out their face things, somebody saying that since, you know, the character actually literally has an alternate name that they can use, because his birth name, well, not apparently, his birth name as of Marvel Spotlight number 2, which came out in February of 1972, is Jacob Russoff. He's very, very Russian in the original, so I don't know. But yeah, that's fine.
I don't know what to expect from that at all, because I have no experience with that title or any of that.
Oh, man, if you get a chance to
and IMDb lists him as Jack Russell, so.
Okay. If you do get a chance, though, to pick up some of that early Werewolf by Night stuff, it's crazy, crazy good. And it's much like the early Ghost Riders, it's just like a rotating cast of writers. So it's like you're Roy Thomas, you're Jerry Conway, you're Marv Wolfman, which is ironic. But you have that, you know, that whole thing. And the early issues are drawn by Mike Ploog. And you don't hear people talking about Mike Ploog, but Mike Ploog was a GD genius.
So. Yeah, he's great. That guy's awesome. And I'm another Jerry Conway fan. He's listens to one of my radio shows, which is weird, but love all his stuff. Yeah, that's great.
Nice.
Yeah. Another fun thing about Werewolf by Night is that we've been so slowly opening the doors to Marvel's magic stuff, but you know, Werewolf by Night leads us to all of the hell guys, to all of the magical guys. Yeah.
The monster heroes, your Frankenstein
monster guys. Yep.
Your sons of Satan.
Sons of
Satan. If they put Son of Satan on Marvel TV, I will go with Steven and we will kneel to the Disney altar because if they put Son of Satan on TV, I swear to you.
My worry is that they will put it on there as a throwaway thing, kind of like a lot of cosmic Marvel characters were just like Ravagers in Guardians of the Galaxy, as like Michelle Yao and like what's his name? Sly.
Stallone.
Yeah, Stallone. Yeah. They were playing characters that were like, you know, superpower like robot guys or whatever. But like in the movie, they were just there for like 10 seconds and they were just Ravagers.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I watched a certain Marvel film that I won't talk about, but the Celestials, who are apparently like a huge, huge, big deal in the Eternals movie. I saw the movie. I don't remember it. The Celestials pop up in a cameo in Thor Love and Thunder, just being and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense with your internal continuity, with the existing continuity, or honestly, you know, in the story proper. But it was funny. So, I mean, I don't know.
All right, dear listeners, we want to know what your feedback, what thoughts you have. Head over to our Discord server. Jump into the Major Spoilers podcast channel to talk about this week's episode. Or if you want to talk specifically about the movies, TV shows, we didn't talk any Star Wars stuff. We didn't talk about Willow, even though I know Scott was dying to talk about Willow. You can talk about those in the movie channel, the TV channel, whatever channel that you want to talk about over in the Major Spoilers Discord server. We are waiting for you. to come and join us. And while we wait for you to show up, here are some reviews.
And unlike my cable provider, the movie channel doesn't cost extra.
Scott, what have you been reading?
So I grabbed a book called Seven Sons. And it was based purely on, I like Jay Lee's cover art. Mm-hmm. That was my draw there. I always think his stuff is super fascinating. I don't always love his Between the Pages stuff, but his covers are always striking and super interesting. And I like his Stephen King run and all that. So I grabbed that, and the concept was interesting. The short of it is there are seven boys all born at the same exact time to different mothers, but born immaculately, meaning they're like Jesus, is the idea. And when this happens, there are no fathers involved. These are all virgin women, and they all have these boys. The world loses its mind and begins basically shifting all forms of worship and religion toward them. They're now the new, you know, this is the big moment. This is Armageddon. This is, you know, basically seven Jesuses instead of one. And everybody just kind of loses their mind over it. And meanwhile, the sons themselves are all kind of messed up. Like, some of them are just like, I hate this. I can't stand the attention. Some of them are actually trying to be the perfect people that they're made out to be. Others put on a big face, but behind the scenes, they're really horrible people. So, you know, deals a lot with hypocrisy and, you know, this sort of stuff. And it's not really even clear that these guys have any, you know, the deification is just purely in the minds of the people, and they're just, you know, it's just some weird fluke or whatever. So I'm not far enough along to tell you how that all ends, and I wouldn't anyway, because it'd be a spoiler. But
unlike the morning stream, Scott, where everybody gets angry when I come on and reveal spoilers, you are free to spoil away on this show.
Well, I'm not. I wish I had something to spoil. Like, I don't know how this ends up, and so I'm hoping it sticks the landing, but I'm really enjoying it so far. Jay Lee does all the art, so everything in the middle and you know, the whole kabang. This is written by Robert Windham and Kelvin Mayo, I guess. Is that how you say his name? Or Mao, maybe?
Mao, probably.
Is it Mao? Probably. Image publishes this, so this is a creator-owned comic, and I think I paid like $3 per digital copy or whatever. I've read issues 1 through 3. Completely hooked. They've remade Vegas into a place they call New Canaan. And this is like this. Vegas becomes, instead of the hub of sin to the world, it becomes the opposite of that. No longer the hub of sin and vice.
The Holy Land.
The Holy Land, yeah. And everybody wants to go there, and some of these sons are there. And there are men with really, you know, mostly money motives that are helping perpetuate this and keep everybody sort of on the hook. So it deals with a lot of, you know, I don't know, issues about manipulation and money and, you know, this sort of thing. But it's got some darker stuff going on, some murders, some unsolved mystery. And I'm really, really liking it. I'm liking it a lot. So I plan to keep going. I'll keep reading it. I think 4 and 5 are probably out, and I just haven't caught up, but Seven Sons, which is available wherever you get your Image comics.
All right. How many slices of meatloaf did you say?
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. That's okay. How much I like it.
All right.
If it nails the landing, I might up that to a 5, because I just think they've painted themselves into an interesting corner, but I think they can do it. And I'm really big on these high concept things lately. Part of it's your fault, because I got really into that 8 billion genies thing. And still loving that. And I think conceptually, that's what drove me, why Seven Sons jumped out at me. I was like, oh, this is different. And that's why I think I like this and 8 Billion Genies. Totally different new ideas. These are like, these aren't just regurgitated comic ideas from 1,000 issues before. These are new ideas with some old stuff thrown in. And, you know, that's working for me right now in comics in a big way. So, on that front, if you're looking for something like very different, Seven Sons might do it for you.
Well, here's another thing you can spend your time on, Scott. How do you feel about like color themed heroes, superheroes?
Color themed?
You got one character who wears a black costume, another character who wears a blue costume, a pink costume, a red costume, and they go out and they do things, and they're powered by alien tech. Not saying that they're the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but I'm also saying they're not the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Okay. So they're not, and they're not at the same time.
Yeah.
How do I feel about that? I'm going to tell you that I don't really like the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. However, I don't mind the idea of colored costumes denoting that hero's abilities and or limitations.
And let me turn you on to Radiant Black.
Oh, geez.
It's also from Image. Radiant Black. And it is phenomenal.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you're looking for something else to read in that Image category, I recommend Radiant Black. Matthew does too. They've got a couple of spinoffs, Radiant Pink and Radiant Red. And have they done a blue one yet?
No.
They will.
They have a pink, they have a yellow, they have black, they have blue. And there are hints of another, like, hiding in the wedges. I'm waiting for Radiant Orange myself, but, you know.
Yeah, one of those just got a new miniseries. I think it's Pink is getting their own series.
I think Radiant Pink is getting a one-shot. Radiant Red just had a five-issue limited end.
Yeah, no, Pink is getting a miniseries, not just a one-shot. It's also going to be a five-issue. Yeah. Anyway.
Nice.
Matthew, you picked up a comic book last week.
I sure did.
All right, cool.
Would you like me to talk
about it? What is it?
Oh,
thanks. Flashpoint Beyond number 5 from DC Comics. Yeah. Okay. So it is written by Jeff Johns, Tim Sheridan, and Jeremy Adams with art by Germanico and Michael Janin. And so here's the deal. I've been reading Flashpoint Beyond since issue number 1, which is a good way to read a comic, I find. And the basic gist is this. Due to time travel shenanigans and nonsense and flibberty blibberty, the Flashpoint reality has been restored somewhere in the Omnimulti Cougar Mellencamp verse. And Thomas Wayne, the alternate Flashpoint Batman, has been sent back to that world to try and figure out how he can maybe save his wife's life. Because if you don't recall that world, their son was killed in an alleyway. She lost her sanity and became the Joker. And he became the Batman. So throughout the first 3 or 4 issues, I'll say the first 3 issues, I just sat there going, oh my God, who is this for? Oh my God, why is this happening? And then issue 4 came out and I went, I think I know why this is happening. And issue 5 opens with a sequence that 125% confirms for me that I know what is happening with Flashpoint Beyond. And I'm going to share it with you, faithful spoilerites, and also my friends here on the panel. So here's the deal. A few years ago, Dark Knights, Metal, The Last Dark Knight, movie film for theaters, was the big, giant, flippy, dippy crossover. It was Scott Snyder basically kind of revamping or relooking or like messing about with the greater DC multiverse. At the same time, Jeff Johns put out a book called Doomsday Clock. If you read Doomsday Clock and you read Dark Knights, Metal, blobbity blobbity blue, you would find 2 very different views of how the DC universe could, should, and probably would work. But it's very important that Doomsday Clock takes place in the future of Dark Knights Metal. Dark Knight's Metal then could end, but no matter what happened there, Doomsday Clock would still happen. So in the very first page of this issue, number 5, which I want to point out, I want to stress for you, came out the same day as Dark Crisis number 4, Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths, part 4 of 7, which is a book telling you about the latest big blobbity blue blah multiversal crossover. This story starts with 2 days after the Dark Crisis, and the first 5 pages of this issue are literally the Jeff Johns version of what's going to happen after Dark Crisis, just like Doomsday Clock was what was going to happen after Dark Knight's Metal. Now, some people may say to you, this spoils the end of Dark Crisis. I will say to you, I feel you. I see that, but I also want you to think for a moment, did you ever really think that the heroes were going to lose, the universe would end, and Superman would really be dead? No, you didn't. But here's the thing about Batman Flashpoint Beyond ... It is a story that has finally found its focus, and that focus is a Batman who's trying to save his father, who is a Batman who's trying to save his son. And if one Batman wins, the other Batman loses. And the rule at DC is Batman always wins. So you have two Batmen working in opposition, each with goals that cannot both win. And the story, the drama, is going to have to be drawn, we finally know in the fifth issue, from finding out which Batman wins and which Batman loses. Now, I will say this. I don't like Flashpoint Batman any better after this issue, but I understand why he's here. And I have to say, I enjoyed this issue more than the previous ones because it became clear that what it is that central premise that Batman versus Batman and only Batman can win, tied with a power play, what I believe to be a power play by Geoff Johns. But that's that other part, that's just, you know, me kind of reading into it. Three slices of meatloaf, because this issue is coherent. The art is pretty phenomenal, I have to admit. I really enjoy the art. There's actually a big two-page spread of Flashpoint Batman smashing through a window. And the window shatters. And as it shatters, we see all these remnants of hypertime, and we see all of these important Batman moments throughout the firmament since 1938. And it's really, really cool. And we get to the end of this issue, and it could theoretically be that big Gonzo Whopper finale that's going to make those first three issues worth the slog. So, again, three slices of meatloaf. I don't want to spoil it. There is a big, big moment in here that's setting up the next issue. And it does start with that moment. So be aware, if you're reading Dark Crisis, this issue is kind of actually trying to tell you how to read Dark Crisis, which I don't necessarily care for, but it's a pretty okay book. I'm starting to understand why it exists.
All right, there you go. Coming out this week from Ablaze Publishing, it is Lovecraft, Unknown Kadath number one, which is the adaptation of the H.P. Lovecraft, The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath, and couple things you need to know about The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath. It is probably the most inside baseball Lovecraft story that's ever out there, because it has characters like Randolph Carter in The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath. This would be his third appearance in Lovecraft stories. You have references to the Plains of Ling. You have references to other characters and other gods that have all appeared in other Lovecraft stories. So this is, I don't want to say that Lovecraft had one of his ribs removed, but it really feels like he had one of his ribs removed. So going into this, be aware that you're going to be inundated with a lot of lore that you're like not going to understand if you've not read a lot of other Lovecraft stuff. I will say that the opening page of this comic was going to have me give this 5 stars because in The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath, Randolph Carter goes to sleep and he dreams of going to the Dreamlands where he meets cats and zoogs and goes on adventures and meets Starspawn and all these other crazy things. The first page of this comic is done like a Little Nemo in Slumberland comic. And I was like, oh, this is brilliant. If they do the whole issue like this, I'm sold on it. They don't. Little Carter grows up to become a grown-up Carter, and so the Dreamland and the art style changes. And I think the narrative flows just very well. I think the story is told very well, although some of the things like, you know, Moon Juice and the Zoogs are going to be like, I don't understand what these things are, because Carter obviously knows them from previous stories. That might throw you off a little bit. The biggest problem is the fact that, of course, H.P. Lovecraft is racist. And I was hoping when you go off into the Dreamlands, you can present characters in a number of different ways. Carter ends up getting somebody slips him a drug in one of his drinks, and he wakes up on a slave ship. The slave ship is, of course, filled with black people, which I found, you know, they could have done something different because they're human black people and not, you know, like crazy otherworldly colored people that are slaves. So that's problematic. There is a character, and again, remember, Lovecraft is racist. There's a character in The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath called the Slanty Eyed Man. And of course they make him look like, Asian, here. So that is those are the couple of things that I kind of wish that, I think Ablaze is, I want to say European, but they may not be, I kind of wish that they would just say, we're going to own some of this stuff and we're going to turn it around so it doesn't feel as weird as it is. I think when you look at Lovecraft Country and look at how they have the black characters dealing with racism in America and how it's, you know, Lovecraft's horrors are nothing compared to the racism of America. I think that makes it work very well. So if you can see past those elements, which I did find rather difficult to get through in a modern day comic, this is actually quite an adventurous story. It does make sense. It is, you know, straightforward. I will also say that The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath is not one of Lovecraft's best stories. I mean, he even wrote in one of his letters that this story is his least favorite of everything that he had written at the time. So just be aware of that when you go into, and there's certainly this self-gratification aspect of reading this and seeing Lovecraft just take all of his works and dump them into one story aspect of it that may be confusing unless you know a whole lot about Lovecraft. But it's still, beyond those big problematic areas that I have, it was still very enjoyable. I really enjoyed this a lot. 3.5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. I think there are some tweaks that they could do to make this get a couple more points out of there. But so far, for the 3-issue series, I think this is 3 issues. I think they're off to a good start. Always with the Ablaze titles as well. In the back of the comic, they have a reprint of the original short story. So that's going to be broken up and serialized over the next couple of issues as well. So that is out this week from Ablaze Publishing. And there's a link to all of these in the show notes if you want to pick it up on through our Amazon affiliate link. Rodrigo, you're wrapping up our review segment this week with something on the completely other side of H.P. Lovecraft, Family Fun Fair from Paper Cuts, which was just acquired by Mad Cave Studios. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Because of my job, I end up watching a lot of children's TV. That has kind of changed because of specifically the clients that I've been working with recently. But it used to be that I was completely all up on what was going on in Nickelodeon, what was going on in the Disney Channel, and all of their sub-entities. So there's this show called The Loud House. So if you, for example, played the Nickelodeon platform fighter, Nicktoon All-Stars, I think, and you're like, I don't know who this Lincoln Loud character is or Lucy Loud. They're from a show called The Loud House. And that show has a spinoff called The Casa Grandes. The premise of The Loud House is that it's one boy who has, I think...
7 sisters or something? Yeah,
8 or 9 sisters. And he's not the youngest. He's actually, like, I think solidly the middle child. The spinoff, The Casa Grandes, is about Ronnie Anne, who is Lincoln's age and one of his best friends. Her family didn't have as many siblings, but then they moved to live with her grandparents. So it's like 2 generations of people there. So it's roughly the same amount of characters, like a ton of characters living in the same house, except it's a Mexican-American family instead of a white family. I haven't seen too many episodes.
Isn't one of them dating the oldest girl in the Loud family?
I think, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think Bobby is dating... I forget all the characters' names. Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
But yeah, no, you're right. I think he is dating Lincoln's oldest sister, and the one who can drive. So this is actually the 4th volume of the Casa Grandes comics based on the Casa Grandes TV show. It's a fun show. It's a very diverse show. I think when The Loud House came out, there was a big note that was like, well, I know that all the characters are related, but this character has like 17 white people and like 1 black person, right? So the Casa Grandes is a much more diverse show because all of the people that exist around the Casa Grandes aren't just white or Mexican. There's actually all kinds of people that live around them. So there's a lot of interactions that are fun. One of the kids from the Casa Grandes family has Down syndrome. So there's stories that sort of relate or are set around basically what he wants to do, what he can do, and things like that. And the way that people treat him is very important. You know, people treat him well and like a valuable member of the family, right? In this specific comic, we have some, you know, some fun with the family. Lincoln, like there's one about her, about Ronnie taking pictures with two of her family members, and they want different things out of the pictures, and she has to like kind of go back and forth in a very cartoony sitcom style and like change her hair and makeup back and forth. So, you know, it's, you know, hijinks like that. Some of the Loud House characters make a cameo here and there. It's good times. If you like these shows or if your kids like these shows, this is a good one to get them. It's like 66 pages. So it's like a volume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you like the Loud House, if you like the Casa Grandes, I'd say go for it. The art style is exactly the style from the show, right? In fact, if you look at the credits for this, it says writer, Loud House creative team, artist, Loud House creative team. And I'm not going to lie, that worries me a little. In that is like, yeah, who is like, is this something that like, while they're trying to like animate the show, they're also like, here, put out a volume of Loud House comics. Yeah. I hope not. I hope that this is, you know, that it's all on the up and up. I have no reason to suspect that it's not, but the anonymity of it kind of struck me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun comic. I give it 3 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. Definitely a good read for young kids. Or for anybody who is into these characters.
Scott, if you have not had your grandson tuned into the Loud House and the Casa Grandes, you might want to tune him into that.
Yeah, he'd probably love it.
It doesn't have dinosaurs, so I mean.
Well, he is super into dinosaurs, and that may never go. But he's right now. It's all Bluey all the time.
Bluey is a good one. I've heard.
Amazing.
I've never watched it, but yeah.
I recommend it even to my adult friends who have no kids anywhere. It's so much more than just a kid show. It's so well made and so, it's the word. There's a legitimacy to it. And by that, I just mean, they're not pandering to anything. They're just telling these stories about this family, and they happen to be dogs, and they're cartoon dogs, and they live in Australia, but there's legit, like, family dynamics there. There are jokes that only adults are going to get. I don't mean it's dirty. It's just, you know, more high-minded than people might think. That's a wonderful show.
Nice.
I highly recommend it. He's currently obsessed with that. So that's all.
Very cool. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, some TV show recommendations in this week as well. Also, if you are a member of our Patreon community over at patreon.com/majorspoilers, this week in the pre-show, we talked about video games. We talked about remaking things and how some stuff isn't made for all of us, but that's okay too. It is made for somebody, and that's what's important. Also, we'll put another Johnson connection in here. Depending on what level you sign up at, you can get some original Carter Johnson digital art in your inbox every month. This month it is She-Hulk, and we're doing things a little differently now so we're able to get stuff out faster to people. We're going digital instead of a physical print. But get this. You get the She-Hulk. You get her face as a little avatar that you can put across all your social medias for the month or for a year. It's up to you. You got a couple of desktop wallpaper size She-Hulks that you can put on your favorite computer. We have that formatted for mobile devices and tablets. So every month you can just get a new piece of Carter Johnson art right there on your favorite electronic device and marvel at it all month long. And I really dig the She-Hulk one this month, Scott. So
I did too. I have to say, and I mean this with all sincerity, some of my favorite work she does is your monthly stuff.
She is awesome. I just I need her. Here's what I need, Scott. I need her to get some of these up and coming kids at the university that she's at.
Yeah.
To create a video game based around her art style.
Oh yeah.
Something that has a lot of puzzles, something that is whimsical. It would make millions upon millions of dollars overnight.
That's what I keep saying. And she's She did buy this software that lets her make modern day point and click adventures.
Oh, cool.
Is used by big point and click adventure makers, and it's
expensive. Oh, so like the Walking Dead type peoples,
kind of that, but more the flat 2D kind of
yeah, like the Finding.
Yeah, well, not just object finding, but like more like Monkey Island era.
Oh, sure.
So a lot of, you know, 2D cell animation style stuff, but it's, but you know, a lot of variety, a lot of stuff you can do in it. Anyway, she wants to self learn that so that she can, you know, put together some sort of, you know, half hour game demo and then see if she can get some traction on it, which I think she could totally do.
Totally. And my son is trying to learn programming right now, the oldest, cause he wants to be a game programmer. So
yeah,
he's learning all the Pythons and all that other stuff, but you can get
a good sign. Everybody else wants to, all the other kids want to be Fortnite pros. You should want a programmer kid. That's what you want.
Yeah, definitely. It's a little bit different than a soccer playing kid. Probably will pay the same amount of money in the long term, but we'll wait and see for that. Meanwhile, Carter Johnson's art, including last month's Ms. Marvel art, are waiting for you when you join us over on our Patreon community, patreon.com/majorspoilers. This week, we're giving a shout out to Steve Dore 2, who joined our Patreon community this past week. We can give you a shout out too. All you need to do is come join our community of superheroes over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Okay. Trade paperback time. This is a Rodrigo suggestion. Kaiju Max, which, as I pitched to Scott earlier this week, is Godzilla Kaijus meets Oz the HBO series.
Kenny. Oz on Monster Island.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you were kidding. Not kidding, but I thought you were maybe exaggerating, but you're kind of totally right about that.
So, Rodrigo, please lead us in a discussion of why Kaiju Max and why Kaiju Max?
So why Kaiju Max? And I understand that part of the way that you're phrasing it, Stephen, is why Kaiju Max?
Yes.
And the main reason, there's two reasons. One, I thought that what I had read of Kaiju Max was really interesting because it's taking really, you know, your horrifying like prison show tropes and your kind of, you know, like scary, but really nowadays not as scary kaiju stuff and smashing it together, I would say really deftly in really good and interesting ways. But I also say that part of the reason of why Kaiju Max is because I had only read a couple of issues, a couple of scattered issues when I suggested it. If I knew how hardcore it actually was, I might not have suggested it.
It is pretty hardcore. So, you know, Oz, the HBO show, which I've only watched, you know, little bits and pieces here and there because it's a little bit too intense for me. But, you know, if you're into shower rapes and vivisections and drug deals and mafia taking, controlling the outside from the inside, and then you mix it with giant
rival
monsters,
gangs,
rival gangs, all that stuff. You got the new bait is in the prison and trying to make their way around drug deals, all these things. I mean, all that stuff is in this first volume. And I knew that it was a little bit more intense than maybe what Rodrigo thought, because quite honestly, Xander Cannon's art is cutesy in the way that he draws all of his giant monsters and robot peoples and all of that stuff. But I knew at the same time that it was like, this is dark. And I think that is an interesting offset of one another, where you have the cutesy art, but super serious, like dark subject matter is I think very interesting. Scott, what'd you think?
I agree. It is an interesting, I think it's wholly original is what I liked about it. Yes, it takes familiar things like, you know, mashing these genres up of, you know, here's prison life and we're going to mix it with kaiju stuff. But it does it in a way that I found to be kind of unexpected. I mean, I just never would have thought of this idea. It's an insane idea. And I think actually kind of ambitious in a really interesting way. If I had any complaints about it, it would be, I got a little hung up on the language of it. And I mean, there's a lot of slang that's kaiju specific.
Yeah.
That some of it speaks to people who are really into that as a sub/sub genre and would get some of that stuff probably quicker than I did. But there's sentences in there. Like I pulled one of these out, there's a guy saying those, he's talking about one of the rival gangs. He says, those J-pop cloakers have ruined this place since you was just a twinkle at the bottom of the sea, yo. That's not just happening no more. This is the Crips are moving up. And it's just sort of like a discordant for me a little bit. And I think part of it is because they're using terms that what you get used to some of them, and they're definitely like inside terms that kaiju would use between each other.
Right.
But at first it just feels like a foreign language. So you're just sort of catching up on that. I found myself having to read some stuff like twice just to kind of get the gist of what like that half monkey, half, what is he?
Ape whale.
Like a crab or whatever he is.
Yeah, ape whale guy.
Some of that stuff, I was just like, wait a minute, what? And then the robots are this interesting group because one of them is like a spiritual leader and trying to teach everybody not to fight back. And they have an interesting language. So there's a lot of that to get used to. But once you do, and if you're in on the concept in general, it's enjoyable. I really had a good time with it. It felt like the kind of thing that in the right hands could be just an amazing CGI movie with lots of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who that is or if they should even try, but it felt like ripe for that sort of thing. I know this came out in 2015, so I don't know if there's like a, you know, anything is being optioned or not.
The series is still going on, so.
Is it? Okay.
There can be things that happen.
Yeah, there's like a Kaiju Max season 2, if I'm not mistaken.
And a season 3, I think, is about to start.
So. Yeah, I thought there was more, but maybe I might be just thinking of issues, but anyway, or volumes.
The other reason why I wondered about why Kaiju Max Rodrigo is, and I noticed this in playing World of Warcraft, if you're one of the high elves on that side of the group, you look at the orcs and you're like, oh, these are horrible, terrible people, and I don't want to be part of that faction. I don't have anything to do. And so every time you see an orc, you're like, oh, those dirty orcs over there. And certainly when we played Dungeons and Dragons, you had the whole arc where you had, you know, other orcs who were not, or I'm sorry, three-quarter orc. Is that right, Matthew? You had Matthew's character. Mm-hmm. We had to come across this race that has been for, you know, all intents and purposes in the game world created by Wizards of the Coast, the evil race or the bad race or the insert your racial stereotype here. But then if you play World of Warcraft and you say, hey, you know what? I'm going to flip around and I want to play somebody on the other side, you know, on the orc side of the thing. And then you find out that the orcs have this really rich history and you find out that there's all these nuances in here and you're like, oh, now I have a better, deeper understanding of the plight of the orcs, especially when you have to deal with those filthy humans on the other side of the World of Warcraft game. And the same way in your game where you're trying to present this other side of, look, we got to move beyond the racial stereotypes of what's going on here. Yeah. And we're going to present these characters in more of a human light. I also wonder if that's why you chose Kaiju Max, because they really humanize giant monsters that go stompy stompy.
Yeah, I mean, they do. And yeah, they show that they basically have, definitely within Kaiju Max, which is the what people call the prison, they have developed their own culture, right? But from what we can tell, all Kaiju are sentient. And we don't see much outside of the walls, or not really wall, like actually there aren't that many walls, but we don't see that much outside of the island. But as far as we can tell, any kaiju that are still out there are themselves also sentient and just like hiding out. They also touch on the fact that like basically energy is like drugs to them. So some of them like get high off of like uranium. Some of them get high off of electricity and things like that, or like smog. It tells you maybe that's why kaiju attack in this world, why kaiju attack human cities, is because they want that. Also, there's a hint that kaiju are just trying to do their thing, but humans are everywhere, right? So it's hard to not run into humans out in the world. So it also has this this theme throughout it of that's something that is present both in prison shows and probably in the real prison system, that there's a lot of people that are sort of set up to fail and end up in jail, right? So that's in here too. Also in here, you actually follow some of the guards. Again, like in a prison show, the characters are not just the inmates, but also the guards. You know, some of the guards have trouble being or start having like remorse about something they do, or some of them start out nice, but then you find out that they're dealing on the side and they're actually pretty bad people. Yeah, there's like all of this stuff going on, and it doesn't, you know, for a comic that is as sort of stylized, it doesn't do anything like, oh, this is the bad kaiju, so we're going to give him like big angry eyebrows or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like you actually can't know from looking at them whether human or kaiju or whatever if they're good or bad, right? Which is kind of an amazing thing for this to accomplish, since once you take a step back, it's a very colorful comic book about kaiju.
Mm-hmm. There's also, Matthew, one of the big tropes in the kaiju area is, you know, the big kaiju has a baby kaiju, and the baby kaiju has little boys that want to be friends. There's a whole arc that plays upon that. And I wonder what your thoughts are on the political internal politics of the prison system of the Kaiju Max.
Well, I have seen every single episode of the 6 seasons of Oz. I know Oz forward and backward, and I am very familiar with Godzilla and the Ultraman series, which is heavily in here. And I do like that storyline. I do like the way it plays out. Sadly, it is exactly, I mean, almost to the letter, the story of Tobias Beecher's arrival in Oz in the first 2 seasons of that show. So as it's playing out, and as we see, and I can never remember the giant insect creature's name, but as we see, you know, the giant grasshopper man. Yeah, the giant grasshopper man, who just wants to try and feed his kids the uranium-238 pods. When you have that, you also know what's coming. And I remember what happened to Beecher, and I'm like, please, God, don't do the thing that happened to Beecher. And they do the thing that happened to Beecher, and I'm just like, no, I'm very upset about that. I feel like this is a really, really well-done agglomeration of two things. I feel like the in-jokes, especially in like the language that Scott mentioned, like when they talk, they don't use the F word. They say Red King. Red King or Redu Kingu is one of the kaiju species from the Ultraman show. Yeah. So the Red King is a type of kaiju. It's like an ancient godlike kaiju. So instead of cursing, you're actually calling in the Red King. And
instead of instead of the N-word, everybody's called a Zilla.
Zilla.
Instead of MF-er, they say megafauna.
Yeah. Yep. The ape whale cracks me up because the name Godzilla in Japan is Gojira. Gojira is half half gorira, which is gorilla, and half whale, which I believe is Kujira. So literally Godzilla's name in Japanese means ape whale.
Yeah. And so we get this whole thing with Godzuki in here. Yeah, and this, I don't know if this little boy that's on the island is in his imagination or someone's playing a trick or whatever, but they con this kid who's not the brightest monster on the block to actually kill and poison his father.
Yes.
Order, poison and then kill, but you know, you get the idea.
And that, I think, is the problem, for me at least, when you get into this story and you're playing it where, you know, we do have these cartoonish characters and we have, you know, the Ultraman characters as the guards and we have familiar archetypes. You know, we have a guy who is essentially, you know, Garmadon. We have a guy who is essentially, you know, Ghidra. We have a Mechagodzilla. We have all these characters, you know, and you have these playing against each other. It feels to me like a real fundamental mismatch to then take the blood and death and murder and white supremacy and, you know, sexual assault of Oz and kind of graft them together, because we get to points in here where, and I don't feel like I'm a squeamish person, but I'm like, no, no. If I were reading this individually issues, I'd be like, no. I think we're done.
I kind of had the opposite effect from you, Matthew, in that reading it all in one trade, in one sitting for me, was mm-hmm. too much. It was just like, oh my God, this is a little bit too much squeamish. This is a little bit too much. I don't know what, but it was, I think taken as a whole, it was somewhat off-putting. Mm-hmm. I think if this were coming out month to month and I was reading the single issues or just taking a break in between chapters in the book, mm-hmm. I could have time to reflect a little bit and think about, well, what is the comic saying about the prison pipeline system? And what is this saying about, you know, race relations, or what is this saying about these greater things in our real world that they're trying to say in this comic book? And I think, you know, when you get to, you know, Kaiju and Ultraman's making out, then that becomes a little bit more, okay, what are they saying here? You know, I think that becomes less problematic than, you know, it being just forcing your eyelids open and putting eye drops in. So you're forced to read this thing all at once. And when nobody's forced to read it all at once, but consume it all in this one batch, like I did, I think was just very, very, very tough.
And there is another thing in here that kind of makes my teeth itch a little. And, you know, it's something that I try to be thoughtful about, but a lot of what we see here in the kaiju culture, which is to say an extension of prison culture, is about, in the real world, people of color. Mm-hmm. You know, and you do have kind of a thing here where you have these monsters standing in for characters or elements that in the straight story, in Oz, for instance, would be like the Adebisi character or the character who, you know, converted to Islam and became an imam in prison. He's here as this robot character. And I'm just like, I'm not entirely comfortable with assigning that in this context to monsters, to this is the bad person or these are the good people. And it's really unnerving for me as, you know, a white cis male in his 50s to read this and go, this stuff is in here, and I don't feel like the creator is really kind of thinking about where it comes from. I don't feel like it's something that is in this story for us to think about, to consider, to say, you know, why is this considered pop culture prison culture? Why is this coming?
Hey, I saw Oz, and here are these tropes, and now I'm going to wedge them into this construct of, hey, they're giant monsters, so now we get to see it through the lens of that, but it's still those tropes without the, I don't know, the mess
without kind of a thought about them. You know, it's not necessarily saying anything with them, it's using them, but it's using them entirely as a reference to Oz, and Oz itself is, you know, kind of a reference not just to real world issues, but kind of a reference to the way, you know, movies and television have interfaced with the idea of prison. And I feel like we're kind of 4 or 5 degrees of separation past reality, but I can't get past the point where, you know, somebody coming up and, you know, saying, hey, Mozilla, what that means, where that comes from, makes me uncomfortable, because we're kind of reading this. And I feel like the takeaway here is supposed to be kind of a general postmodern amusement, you know, where I feel like I'm supposed to walk away from this kind of going, yeah, that was fun. That was kind of cool seeing that mashup.
Cause I came away from it very differently. I didn't find it as, oh, this is amusing. I felt like maybe the art style is a way of bringing people into this in a comfortable way. Having it being kaiju is a way to bring them into these topics in a comfortable way. But then you're like, okay, here's the subversive stuff. We're really talking about racism. We're really talking about crime. We're really talking about how, when, you know, people are clustered into these areas, how they form up their tribes and how those tribes are going to kill one another. That's how I approached it. That's why I said it's very tough to read all at once. But I think if you had that month to month, again, me personally, I would come away from it going, oh, there, the creator is actually trying to say something. And maybe that's why what I said at the beginning, there's such a weird offset between the cutesy art and the serious subject matter.
It's like what people always say about Star Trek. You know, they're gonna try to tackle big social issues, but they're gonna do it because easily or more simply because there's an alien with a weird forehead, and you can get away with it because you're talking about another planet.
Right. Yeah,
but at the same time, you're also talking about principles that apply to real life. And this feels like it's trying to do that, but it's just doing it flatly. It's like
almost flippantly in some way.
A little bit like, hey, you know, they'll call each other the N-word in prison. What if they call themselves this? And that's as far as it seems like it's thought out. So, I don't know what else you'd add to that. Like, this would strike me as really hard material to even want to make. And that's why I feel like it's so ambitious, because I don't know if I have that ambition. It just seems really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it does. And I feel like, you know, I don't necessarily see as much of what Stephen is seeing in terms of like the discussion or the analysis or kind of pulling these things apart. I really do feel like in a lot of ways, and I think I'm the same age and definitely the same, you know, ethnicity as Xander Cannon. I feel like it may be one of those things where the creator had these things, put these elements in here for us to try and do, you know, to think about for ourselves. But I also want, or maybe I feel like I need something from the creator to say, you know, hey, there's this whole thing. Like, as much as I disliked it, the sequence where the Godzilla character, you know, basically assaults Electrogore, and, you know, we see him with the doctor recovering and trying to get past this, and not just the physical part of it. I feel like that tried to address more than just, wouldn't it be funny if prison rape? Because that was not played funny. That was played in a way that felt like it was trying to be dramatic. I don't know if it 100% succeeded, but I feel like as I came away from that, I felt like, okay, I hate that. I didn't want to read that, but I understand why the creator wanted to put that in here. And I feel like, again, having seen all of Oz, I will tell you that Xander has probably seen all of Oz. And I feel like it is really, really difficult and really, really impressive the amount of synthesis we get here of the tokusatsu and the HBO, you know, after hours drama. But as someone who's relatively conversant in both, it's very, very influenced by both. So it's not necessarily, I don't want to say that it's not saying anything new, because that's not what I mean either, but it's definitely taking a lot of these bits and pieces and playing them entirely straight, as in, this is how the Ultraman series did this, and this is how Oz did this. And if you know that, if you have seen that, then you know where this goes from here. And I feel like, for me, knowing that was kind of off-putting, kind of less enjoyable, maybe. And this may be one of those cases where not knowing the source material may make it more enjoyable.
Rodrigo, final thoughts on this? Did you like it, not like it?
Well, we've talked about crime stuff and we talked about prison stuff before. Mm-hmm. I mean, media. And it's not my favorite, right? I am in general not, I don't tend to like things where like people just like suffer and suffer and suffer. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of sort of like prison type media is like, for good reason. So from that angle, Kaiju Max is not the sort of thing that I would want to read regularly or keep reading. But I think it does, like, it expends a lot of effort in the synthesis, right? In trying to like, you know, Monster Island from Godzilla. What if that was a, you know, what if the monsters there were like prison inmates, and just like taking every point and moving it to like an in-between point between everything, from like locations to plots to themes to everything. It's like everything in Kaiju Max is at the in-between point between Godzilla and Oz. And sometimes that's incredibly clever, and sometimes that's like kind of annoying, and sometimes it's like really off-putting. But it's really thorough about it. So it's an interesting read. It's a very interesting thing to read. I don't regret having read it. But again, if I'm just kind of leisurely reading something, I'm not going to pick up Kaiju Max to read.
Yeah, this is a very deep, intense book. I'm interested to see what happens to Electric Gore once he breaks out of prison, which he does at the end of this volume, because Electric Gore just wants to get back to the children and make sure the kids are okay. And we're not sure that the kids are okay, which is a whole other level of terror and uncomfortableness in this book. Yeah. The art is really pretty. The stories are, I think, a lot more deep, and I think they're intended to be deep. This series was up for an Eisner Award for Best New Series back in whatever year, 2016. So there's a lot of people that recognized what Xander Connor was trying, or Cannon was trying to do. I just say, if you're going into this, be aware that this is not happy fun times with cute kaiju.
Trigger warning.
Lots of trigger warnings is what I would say. So, but I didn't hate it. This is definitely, check it out from your library if your library has it. Definitely not a rush right out in a buying frenzy for me, at least. Matthew, I think you've said a lot, but do you have a summary of your final thoughts?
I didn't like it as much as I wanted to. And the reasons I didn't like it were such that I can't recommend it. However, I feel like it probably will be a lot of people's jams, and I can definitely see the quality of the material and the amount of work that went into it. It just didn't really land for me.
And we are only into the first season, right? I mean, we didn't get to see what happened afterwards or anything like that.
But I mean, a 6-issue arc is a pretty solid chunk of something. So
Scott, you are our guest. You get the final say this week on Kaiju Max season one.
The final say, you say?
The final say, I say.
I think it's an incredibly ambitious concept that is really hard in execution, and it's a mixed bag as a result. I'll say that. And I think so if that makes somebody go, oh, well, I kind of want to see people take chances and do, then maybe this is something to at least check out and see what you think. I love the idea of mushing up genres. This made me want, like, you know, I don't know, a mob themed forest animal story or something, you know, like a combination of these ideas is really interesting and a little tricky. And I agree with Matthew that I did feel like, you know, I've seen all of Oz as well, and I felt like I was seeing a fan recreation of Oz in his own, with his own twists a little bit. And as a result, I think that lessened it some, but it is definitely unique. And let me put it that way. And I'm glad that the comics world allows for space for things that are different and new and interesting. And this is definitely one of those. Mixed bag on the results, though.
All right. That's where we're going to wrap it up this week. Thank you, everybody, for being part of the show. Scott, thank you for being a part of the show once again. Tell everyone where they can find all your awesome stuff that you do every day that makes you awesome.
Well, in particular, I would recommend people, if you hear me talking about video games on here, and usually have a lot to say about those sorts of things, you might want to check out my show called Core, which happens every Thursday. It is a deep dive into all things video games, the industry, all the way down to stuff we're playing. And you might think, well, I've heard a million video games shows before. What makes this different? And I think it is just our crazy cast of people who are on there. Just really interesting guys. Bo and John and myself have a great time on there. Tons of passion. And it's available wherever you get your podcasts. So check out Core wherever you get those. Or if you're looking to find out where I live, you can find it at frogpants.com/core.
Well, I don't think we want to find out where you live, because that could cause all sorts of problems. But definitely go check out Frog Pants. Thank you, Scott. Matthew, people can find you where?
Find me on the Twitter at Mighty King Cobra. That's pretty much the only place you can find me on the social media. If you're in Central Kansas and a fat man in a red car gives you the finger because you're driving badly, you might have also found me there.
And Rodrigo.
You can find me at Fearsome Critter on Twitter. You can also find my streams at twitch.tv/lpikachon. And yeah, just follow it around from there. I'm all kinds of places. You know, something will come up.
All right. And some news in regards to other projects and where you can get some Rodrigo projects. It's already out there. It's a Kickstarter project, but more information can be found this weekend on the new Critical Hit episode that's coming your way. I'll give you some information and details all about that. Let's just say that Rodrigo has some work cut out for him in the new year. So good job, Rodrigo.
Thank you.
All right. And dear listener, thank you for listening. If you found value in the show, we'd love for you to join us over on our Patreon, where you can find even more fun. Like I said, we were talking video games and other stuff in the pre-show this week. It's all part of that Major Spoilers podcast pre-show, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Hope to see you there very soon. And until next time is general topic. So if you have questions, why don't you drop us an email, podcast@major. Oh, no. Next week is Alice in Borderland. Sorry. Then general chatter. So we're going to be taking a look at some manga next week on the Major Spoilers podcast. Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. We will talk with you soon.
If I had the X-ray vision of a Superman, I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven rich like a man of iron, I might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.